This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast of Worldwide Wave, the international LGBT news and current affairs show, every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
It's Worldwide Wave time. Joy's international news and current affairs show for the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one country at a time. Big thank you to JJ there for the hits and Judy for bringing us the latest in local news. On the Worldwide Wave panel tonight, hello Alex.
Bonsoir.
Ian is here.
Good evening.
We've got a special mystery panellist.
Oh, that's me. Hello. Hi, everyone.
And I'm Matt.
It's been a while.
Welcome back,
Missed
Jason.
Missed the cue. Thank you. Thank you very much.
A very special guest on the show tonight, one of the highest profile LGBTQ people in the United States. Sarah McBride is the National Press Secretary for the Human Rights Campaign. She's an activist who came out as a transgender woman while president of a university student body. She's worked inside politics, including as a White House intern, and continues to drive change for LGBTQ Americans.
Sarah reveals how her life changed when she appeared on national television.
And we find out how you build resilience against a cascade of online bullying when you are a high-profile LGBTQ activist.
And we find out what she sees as the biggest challenges for the USA under President Trump.
Plus, later on, we have Worldwide Rap, and in that we've got Kenya's shock ruling to continue criminalising homosexuality, the World Health Organization being praised and panned by the LGBTI community, you'll find out why, and how shaving is being used for equality
how
in Canada.
Shaving.
Now, we'd love you to be part of the show. Get involved if you want to. If you would like to comment on the show, you can send us an SMS on 0427JOY949. You can send us an email, please do, in the studio to onair@joy.org.au. You can call Neil on the front desk on 1300JOY949, and we're live on Facebook for your questions or comments.
Our diverse communities have one home, Joy.
Sarah McBride gained international attention when she came out as a transgender woman after being elected president of the Student American University. Her profile was absolutely cemented when she was invited to address the National Congress of a major political party. In this case, it was the Democratic National Congress. She was the first transgender person to ever do so. It was 4 minutes that changed her life. Here's what happened when she took the stage.
Sarah McBride is a courageous young leader, and she is right now the first trans person ever to address a national convention. Sarah, it's about time. Sarah, it is an honor to make history with you because we are stronger together.
McBride, and I am a proud transgender American.
That really put you on the stage. You know, everyone tweeted that, everybody watched that. What was life like after that? Am I right in thinking that was one of the things? It was the day before and the day after was different?
Yeah. It's funny you mention that because the day after I was driving with my mom and we went out to get Italian water ice in the middle of the day. It was summer of 2016. And I said, it feels so normal right now, but it also feels like everything's completely changed. Having the opportunity to speak at the Democratic National Convention was the greatest professional opportunity and responsibility of my life. It was really powerful to be in that arena, to watch an arena full of people applaud and cheer not my dignity, not my story, but the dignity and the stories and the rights of transgender people across the United States. And that was really, for so many transgender people, the first time we saw politics, which unfortunately, historically, is a cautious field, so clearly embrace our lives and our cause. And from that day on, I've had the opportunity to have my voice heard in big and small ways in the movement for equality in the United States, and to travel around the United States and increasingly the world.
That's Sarah McBride, the National Press Secretary for the Human Rights Campaign in the USA. We've got heaps more coming up with Sarah, but I just want to paint a bit of a picture here about what a Democratic National Conference means, because in Australia, we've just come out of an election campaign, and we have nothing that is even close to this.
So no, they're a bit like the party, our equivalents of the party sort of launches, aren't they?
But these are like on speed, they go for about 4 days. Yeah. They book out entire cities to have these. Stadiums are filled. It would be like, you know, Scott Morrison or Bill Shorten doing the MCG or something, not quite that big, but it is just euphoric. And then to have Sarah here as the first transgender person addressing that and putting forward rights and issues for LGBTI community, it's amazing.
Yeah, and this was the one that put up Hillary Clinton as the candidate back in 2016, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it was also around that time and that there were all the transgender bathroom stories and issues. So quite a lot of vitriol going around at the time. We get into that a bit more with Sarah coming up in terms of the attacks that she has had to endure. So coming up, Sarah shares how she survives and thrives in the online world where she is a prime target for trolls. This is World Wide Wave.
Joy.
Hello, Australia. This is Noam Apple and Tom from Apple Models in Thailand. The world's first transgender model division on Joy 94.9.
I couldn't trust, cause of love, time is up, cause I've had enough.
little bit faster, made my skin a little bit thicker. It makes me that much smarter. Thanks for making me a fighter.
Christine Aguilera. Our guest tonight is Sarah McBride, a leading LGBTI activist from the USA.
Now, we've got a message has come in, first of all. So, message is in on 0427JOY949. Thanks, 317. Great to have you back. What does our guest, Sarah, think of gay Christians running for president like Peter Buttigieg? Did you were you able to cover that in the interview?
Oh, I definitely did. But, you know, actually, we had such a great long chat. We're not going to be able to feature everything tonight. So I'm going to tease you and say that there is more to come. And she definitely answers that question. But I'm not going to tell you now.
Oh, I don't think I like that. Now, 317 also mentions Tim Wilson on Q&A. And there has been a rise in right-wing queer people enjoying a political career both here and in the USA. Do these individuals create a safe space for progressive values?
Well, do you know that Sarah was out to be one of the international panelists in a book called The Children of Harvey Milk. The book's written by Andrew Reynolds. And that's very much about LGBTQ politicians around the world, people who are directly elected. And it's true that there are LGBTQ elected officials from all sides of Parliament. In fact, if you look in Australia, we've actually got quite a few people in the Liberal and...
Senator Dean Smith was one of the leaders in the marriage equality bill on the Liberal side.
Yeah, I think we've actually got more LGBTQ elected officials on the right than on the left who are elected at the present time. Same thing in the US as well. Andrew Reynolds made a comment to me when I was chatting to him saying that actually if you are from the country and you are standing locally, you've actually got 2-3% swing towards you, no matter what your politics is, because you're local, and something has changed there in local politics and regional politics in the US. All shapes and sizes, just because you're LGBTQ.
Well, let's hear some more from Sarah, a leading LGBTQ activist from the USA, or more specifically from Delaware, where everybody asks.
I wasn't sure either.
Delaware's one of those little states on the east coast.
Well, you know,
just north of
Washington.
Yeah, near Washington.
Here's more of Sarah.
Joy 94.9.
You come from Delaware. And I had to look up Delaware on...
Tell me that. That's the worst insult for a Delawarean to heal. Although we hear it all the time.
But I'm curious. What was it like to grow up in Delaware?
Delaware is a really close-knit state. We're a small state. We have less than 1 million people. And what I like to say is that Delaware is a state of neighbors. I have been exceptionally fortunate to have grown up in a state like Delaware, where I was met when I came out with a community that loved and embraced me, by a government that recognized that their job was to protect the dignity and rights of every person in our state, including transgender people, and stepped up to pass protections for transgender people. So I'm very lucky to have been born in Delaware. It was a great place to be born and raised. It's a great place to live right now, where I work remotely for the Human Rights Campaign. We have a lot more work to do in Delaware, but I'm glad to say that it's a blue state, as we like to say, where we have elected officials who are committed to equality and committed to doing the work.
So you were already involved in politics. You were a Democrat. You've been involved in campaigning. And then you put an article in, the newspaper was called The Eagle?
Yeah, the student newspaper at American University. I was serving as student body president at the time. When I came out, it was halfway through my term. And then with the courage and the confidence that my parents gave me in May of 2012 during the last day of my term, I came out as transgender in my student newspaper to my campus community. And, you know, I was very scared about the campus's response. It was 2012. It was before what our media had sort of dubbed the transgender tipping point. I didn't know how our campus would respond to really an out transgender student, let alone an out transgender student body president. But every response I got, every comment, every message, every interaction I had after I came out with my campus community and with my community back in Delaware was an interaction of love and support and an acceptance. But what was also very clear to me very quickly was that the experiences I had were unique. I looked around my campus, I looked around my community, and I looked around my country, and it was clear that for far too many transgender people, the experiences I had were a privilege for the few, not a right guaranteed to everyone. And at the end of the day, it shouldn't be a privilege to be able to keep your family after you come out. It shouldn't be a privilege to be able to keep your job or stay in school after you come out. And it certainly shouldn't be a privilege to be safe from violence. And so, as positive as that experience was, recognizing that coming out for me was the hardest thing that I had ever done up until that point, but was still so easy compared to the experiences of so many other people, it was through that recognition that I decided to be an activist and to try to make sure that the privileges that I have are no longer.
And you were political from a young age and from a political family. How important was the support of your family when you came out as a trans, as a proud transgender woman?
The support of my family when I came out was life-saving. I remember after I came out, my father went online. The night after I came out, it was Christmas Day in 2011. And he did what I had done every night for the previous 5 years. He Googled the word transgender. And he came across an aptly titled report called Injustice at Every Turn, which is put out by the National Center for Transgender Equality and the National LGBTQ Task Force. And in the survey and in the report, it documents that 41% of transgender people attempt suicide at some point in their lives. 41%. And that's not because transgender people are predisposed to attempt suicide. It's because society puts so many barriers in our way. So many obstacles to happiness and wholeness and fulfillment and community and love that nearly half of transgender people decide that they would rather end their lives than exist in this world. But what he saw in that statistic was that when the transgender person is embraced by their community, that number drops significantly. And when they're embraced by their family, it drops even further. And so having the support of my family, it is not hyperbole to say that it was life-saving for me, and that when transgender people are able to be embraced and loved by their families and their communities, by their governments, it doesn't just send a positive message to those transgender people. It doesn't just protect them from discrimination. It can literally be the difference between life and death.
Sarah McBride, absolutely, the National Press Secretary for the Human Rights Campaign, speaking with Ian just this past week. The transgender tipping point. What's the tipping point, do you think?
Well, I imagine there's a specific sort of event in the media, but my personal feeling would be that it would be around that general critical mass that kind of occurred in both film, television, the Trump campaign regarding, as Ian mentioned before, the gender and toilets issue in schools in the US. And
so when it became okay to sort of talk about it?
When it was clear this was the next frontier of LGBTI rights.
Because we sort of see that quite often. Gay rights come first, then lesbian rights, and then sort of kick the ball down and transgender rights, probably even before bisexual rights, actually, in many countries, I would argue.
Yes. I think because of the hidden aspect of bisexuality, that it's a more hidden identity, if that makes sense.
And this importance of family, that acceptance, and I'd love just hearing that her dad went to Google, like, I really don't understand enough about this. Let's Google it and see what's there.
Yeah.
I wonder how many parents out there do the same thing.
And you've probably got some pretty scary or, sobering stories.
And family comes in all shapes and sizes. I mean, I think that's partly what we were talking about. And it's so beautiful to talk to Sarah, is that family can be your mum and your dad and your sisters and your brothers, but it can also be community. It can be what joy is, really. And
what you choose your family to be.
Exactly.
Yeah, your chosen
family. Exactly, yeah. But the importance of that, especially in tough times, is something that we did explore with Sarah.
The other thing she mentioned there, that Delaware was a blue state, which in their language, it's a Democrat state. So their states seem to be very one-sided. We don't kind of
yes
have that
no.
as much here.
I mean, you have Florida, Ohio, your classic swing states, and they what is it? I think it's Ohio or the seat of Pittsburgh. They don't call them necessarily seats, but the district of Pittsburgh, I believe, is kind of has picked the last several candidates or presidents, I was about to say prime ministers. Yeah, so no, they do have swing states, but yes, so blue states tend to be predominantly northeastern states.
But I guess
California.
From our point of view, we don't have that, it's not quite as intrinsic as that. We do have quite frequent changes of party. It's not sort of that black and white dominance. It's quite an interesting difference.
Yeah. But we have also seen some pretty safe seats here over, because I know a lot of them have changed recently. But
we've got a heap more coming up from our guest tonight, Sarah McBride, the National Press Secretary for Human Rights Campaign. You are on World Wide Wave.
Hi, everyone. My name is Yang Fa from Singapore. You are listening to World Wide Wave. Lots of love to everyone. Join 94.9.
It's a show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. We've got some more messages coming in on 0427 join 949. Thanks, 317. Very much, 317 is very much looking forward to hearing those responses. I think it's going to be on the Informer. Is that
right? It'll be on the Informer.
Thursdays at 7.
Yeah.
So we'll keep you posted on that one. 317 loves Pete Buttigieg. Very progressive voter. And she has a lot in common with Tim Wilson. Not quite sure she'd like to hear that, but they both started in student politics at university. Fun fact. Thank you for that. We love it.
Yeah, we need fun facts as well. Yeah. Now, at the age of 28, Sarah McBride is very young to be on the American national stage. She has grown up in the digital age and the social media age and is well used to that. And with that and the opportunities for advocacy also comes the bad. Her profile has attracted more than its fair share of trolls and bullying. So a trigger warning for this next section. We do discuss online bullying and mental health issues in this section. If you need support or someone to talk to, do reach out to Lifeline, which is available 24 hours on 13 11 14. That when you do become a public figure in 2019 and for several years now in social media, you're very exposed. What strategies do you have to deal with the hate and the abuse that inevitably comes with being in that public position? How do you mentally cope with that?
That's a really great question. And I think it's a question, it's one of the most significant questions we have is how do we leverage the positive aspects of social media in the digital age where we have democratized the microphone? How do we as a society make sure that we're ensuring that that's allowing for diverse and marginalized voices to be heard and not just the overcrowding of those spaces into the comment sections of basically Fox News in the United States? And that's a big question for our society. But for me, in dealing with that hate and the bullying that I've seen online, I think I try to remember two different things. The first is that the glimpse that I have on my social media into that bullying is just a tiny reflection of what particularly LGBTQ young people are facing every single day. The second lesson I try to remember is one that I learned in probably the worst experience of online harassment that I had. And in 2016, before the convention, I took a selfie of myself in a bathroom in North Carolina that I was legally barred from being in after the North Carolina legislature had passed HB 2. And the post and the picture quickly went viral, and the responses that came in at first were incredibly positive. But then the more it spread across the internet, the more the responses were incredibly hateful. I mean, from threats of murder and sexual assault to the most common comment, which was three letters over and over again, KYS, 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 kill yourself, kill yourself, kill yourself, over and over again. And I was 25 at the time. I didn't think words on a screen could impact me as much, but it was the only period of time in my life where suicide became even a rational thought. Because it was just so overwhelming. And even though I knew the news cycle would dissipate, I still just wanted out of it so badly. And after it finally did dissipate, I wondered, can I do this work? Can I be public as a transgender person in any kind of occupation? Because this is the inevitable byproduct, and I don't know if I have thick enough skin. And so I spent a lot of time reflecting and reading and listening to a lot of other folks who experience online harassment. And I came across an interview with a reporter who writes a lot about body positivity and her weight. Mm-hmm. And there was an interview with her that really helped to shift my perspective and help me deal a little bit more with the online harassment. And the lesson I took from it, which is that so often we say that the biggest bullies are oftentimes the biggest closet cases. And that might be true in certain instances, but it undervalues and diminishes a more universal truth, which is that everyone has an insecurity. Whether it's their sexual orientation or their gender identity or how they look, what they do, how they sound, where they come, no matter what it is, everyone has something that society has said they should be ashamed of or tried to hide. And the thing about LGBTQ people is that we have taken that fact, we have taken our insecurities, we have taken our biggest fears, and we've not only accepted them, but oftentimes we walk forward from a place of pride in them. And the bullies see that power. They see that individual agency in conquering our own fears, and they're jealous of it. And that was something that I needed to learn in order to be able to put 2 feet in front of the others and in order to continue to do this work, to recognize that the hate that comes my way, it's because I'm powerful.
And it can make us stronger. I mean, it sounds sort of flippant to say that, but it can make us stronger with the right support, and as well as being very, very damaging as well.
I think you're absolutely right that it has a severe risk of traumatizing people. But I also think that in some cases, you know, the old cliche of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger can be true. And I actually think on this 50th anniversary of Pride, one of the things that I'm reflecting on is the fact that as a community, every attack that has come our way, every instance of persecution or oppression has resulted in our community organizing and mobilizing, having conversations with the public that serve to open hearts and change minds. And in the end, it sows the seeds of the destruction of the politics of hate that anti-equality politicians and activists seek to implement. And that every single time they come for us, we end up growing stronger. We end up moving the conversation forward. We end up becoming better organized and mobilized. We end up laying the foundation for us to move equality forward in cities and towns and countries around the world.
Do you describe yourself as a policy geek or a policy nerd? So you've probably got a whole bunch of ideas about what you think needs to happen next. What would be on your wish list for what should happen next and changes in policy, especially in the US?
Well, I obviously, in terms of LGBTQ equality, the fact that LGBTQ people don't have clear protections is of the utmost urgency in passing. But beyond that, I want to make sure that we have healthcare that meets the diverse needs of our community, whether it's people living with HIV or transgender people seeking transition-related care. Far too many folks still find the care that they need out of reach, particularly in the United States, where we have far too many people without access to health insurance. We are constantly having conversations in the United States about how do we expand family-inclusive workplace policies. So the United States is the only industrialized nation that doesn't have paid family and medical leave for citizens across the United States. And when we are having that conversation in our politics about making sure that we move paid family and medical leave forward, we're also working to make sure that that's inclusive of LGBTQ families and LGBTQ people and their needs. So there's a number of different issues beyond sort of the sexual orientation and gender identity explicit policies that we seek to push forward. But I'll tell you the one that's on my mind the most right now is we just saw a spree of killings of transgender women, all three Black transgender women in the United States over the last 2 weeks. And the violence against the transgender community in the United States is an epidemic, and it is an issue that requires urgent action from individuals, from policymakers, from governments, because it is a crisis that is resulting in the deaths of far too many transgender people every single year, particularly Black transgender women. And this epidemic over the last three weeks in the United States has only grown in its cruelty, in its urgency. And that one is an issue that haunts me. I know it haunts so many LGBTQ people and activists in the United States. And that's one that we need urgent action on. Not tomorrow, not next week, not next year. We need it now.
We need that on the agenda. Sarah McBride, with proud transgender women like you, we are stronger together. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
She was Sorry. She was just beautiful. She was just amazing. And that was quite an emotional conversation. And I think it's quite important that we give a bit of context to that conversation.
Yes, and there was some issues.
If you need some support, Lifeline 13 1114 13 11 14. Q Life, of course, which is Switchboard here in Victoria as well, 1-800-184-527, and beyondblue.com.au is there as well.
Yeah, I mean, Sarah really did turn that conversation around, which was quite tough at times, and she was very prepared to talk about that, but she turned it around to how she had built resilience from that. But not everyone can build resilience from being bullied online.
Well, it is such a, again, to sort of magnify it from what we would know here, I think the debates are less civil and people sort of, you know, can hide behind the online facades, but also just the number of people. So, you know, if you do something here in Australia and a few tweets, a few responses, whatever, but when you've got a population of 300 million people.
Yeah.
I mean, Sarah has like 50,000 followers on Twitter and on 30,000 on Facebook. You know, she is going to attract a lot of comments. And hopefully
something
a lot
she
of-
said there was, she said, everyone has an insecurity. And I guess the online trolls, that's, you know, quite likely a part of their insecurity. Their way of hiding their insecurity is to attack somebody and somebody they've never met.
It's the root of homophobia, isn't it? You know,
how do you have a civil debate on a topic like transgender rights if you don't have any understanding, if you've never met a trans person, or if you think you've never had a met a trans person?
How do you have a conversation?
How do you have a debate, or how do you stop the whole transgender people who don't have an idea of what they're talking about, you know, starting arguments and you know, peddling such hate on the internet?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I, as a high school teacher, I've confronted with aspects of this with boys' attitudes towards feminism and women's rights, and there's just this common perception. This is all. It's all gone too far. And I said, have you even spoken to some of the girls at school about this, or you know, have you thought about? Have you spoken to your mothers, your sisters, and you know, like you know, you need to actually inform yourself about the perspectives, and before you just, you know, it's like this certain segment of society is always quick to jump, see this as some new front of PC ideology being shoved down their throats, and yet sometimes I just raise my hands and say to the boys, you need to go out and work in the real world, and then you'll be confronted with these people, they'll challenge you. And I think that's sometimes the only way, because they always have a quib smart response to me when you go, oh, you're just a lefty, blah blah blah, socialist, Marxist teacher, whatever, state school teacher. And you know, I just sometimes I go and I try to argue reasonably, but then, and it's just, I just realize there's some people just, they need to get out in the world, they need to have some hard blows, be
but it is that thing about being challenged. I mean, challenged. Sarah was saying there that you know, as a community there are a lot of things that we've accepted, and in doing that we've owned it and taken it forward, and that really makes attackers a bit defenseless. Where do they go? Well, yeah, okay, I'm a fag.
Yes, and I think sometimes what I'm sort of in a way saying is they will need to go out, some of these people, and just meet these people in real life, work with them, come across them in general everyday activities, and then they'll be confronted at some stage with their own prejudices and misunderstandings. I think sometimes that's the only way people grow. But
well, a fascinating interview.
Hi, this is Robin Tyler, and I am a producer, I'm an activist, I'm a comic, and I'm also legally married to my wife, Diane Olson, for over 7 years. On the World Wide Web.
My mama told me when I was young, we're all on superstars. She rolled my hair, put my lipstick on, in a glass of her boudoir. There's nothing wrong with loving who you are, she said, 'cause he made you perfect, babe. So hold your head up, girl, and you'll go far. Just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Don't be a drag, just be a queen. Give yourself prudence and love your friends, so we can rejoice the truth. In the religion of the insecure, I must be myself, respect my youth. A different love is not a sin, believe capital H.
Just be a queen, whether you're broke or evergreen. Your black, white, beige, Chola descent, your Lebanese, your Orient. Whether life's disabilities left you outcast or leader teased, rejoice and love yourself today, 'cause baby, you were born this
way. No matter gay, straight or bi, lesbian, transgender life, I'm on the right track, baby, I was born to survive. No matter black, white, or beige, Chola or Orient made, I'm on the right.
Monsters, wave your hands in the air. That's Lady Gaga. And
that one's a bit special. We put that in very deliberately. Why was that?
Oh, because Sarah actually has been supported by the Lady Gaga Foundation.
Don't we love Gaga?
We do.
Is there a Lady Gaga Foundation?
There is a Lady Gaga. Can't even say Lady Gaga Foundation, which supports equality and LGBTI rights.
You've got your own foundation. Message on 0427 join 949 from 317. What I see from this interview is there is a pecking order in queer spaces, and trans people are left behind and still need to fight for their rights. That's shameful. But you, Alex, you mentioned that there was a TV show that's just had a trans...
I suppose it's following on from that that degree of raised visibility we're seeing across a whole range of media platforms. Last night's episode, I'm a bit ashamed to say this because I usually say I don't watch these shows, but I was watching a certain singing contest on a certain commercial channel, namely The Voice last night, and there was a lovely segment. It's a blind audition, so there's people, you know, coming on, doing their thing and getting the chairs turned or not, and a young trans male came on, age 15, lovely story, and parents really spoke quite at length about the parents' support in the background. You know, they do the little backstory. Really positive story, and really just, I thought, wow, to be that together at 15.
And
shows. Well received. Because he basically had to, after singing, had to talk about the transition from voice, because he began singing as a girl.
Wow.
And then from a young age, and then transitioned only 9 months ago, I think it was, 9 months, a year ago, and started taking hormones and affected his voice, and now he's like learning to sing with a male voice. Really interesting, positive story. Yep.
So sometimes change comes in inches.
Yes.
Big thank you to Sarah McBride, who's the National Press Secretary for the Human Rights Campaign, and you can find them on www.hrc.org.
And all the messages that have come in on Facebook, Betty, William, Mickey, Clint, Nicole, and 317's just sent a final one as well. Fantastic show tonight. Always informative and insightful.
Thank you. Thank you.
For Alex, for your work putting together our podcasts.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Dean, behind the scenes, our special button pusher, Jason, here tonight.
Yay.
Happy to push buttons. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Geeks Out is next with Miranda and Clayton. Great show where the geek worlds collide. So stick around all night with Joy. Triple Bypass following in Homophonics at 10. I think we need a bit of upbeat, fighting, spiritual, uplifting music to take us out. So how about, have you got a bit of faith? I've got faith in Sarah.
You've got to have faith.
Got to have faith. We'll catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Oh.
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch your body. I know not everybody has got a body like but I gotta think twice before I give my heart away. And I know all the games you play because I play them too. Oh, but I need some time off from that emotion. Time to pick my heart up off the floor. Oh, when that love comes down with a devotion. Well, it takes the strong man, baby. I gotta have faith. I gotta have faith. Because I got to go for faith. I got to have faith, for faith, for faith. Baby! I know you're asking me to stay. Say please, please, please don't go away. Say I'm giving you the blues. Maybe. You mean every word you say. I can't help but think of yesterday. And another who tied me down to love a boy who. If all of this river becomes an ocean, before you throw my heart back on the floor. Oh, baby, I'll reconsider my foolish notion. Well, I need someone to hold me, but I wait for something more. Yes, I gotta have faith. I gotta have faith, the faith, the faith.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7pm Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne and online at joy.org.au. You'll find all our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3Joy on Facebook now.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.